Hi folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 32. Is it 32? It is 32. Pretty cool. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars, amps, pedals, music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the blog or show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. But last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts notifying you when a new episode has been released and or other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. I've been receiving some notifications through that form with empty fields, so I don't know if you're having trouble sending, filling that out or whatever. If you're having if you filled out the form and you haven't received notifications, go ahead and just email me at info@theguitarpodcast.net and say you wanna get the notifications. Anyway, let's get on with it. Last week, we talked about some different things, some cool things from the last couple years that just wanted to talk about. And so I went to a few of my favorite local guitar stores, checked out some stuff. One thing I found that I didn't talk about last week, but I really have been wanting to pick up for a while, and it's only about $10. It is the Planet Waves, the headstand. It's a string-changing stand, stabilizes guitars during string changes. It's really cool, really inexpensive. It's a tripod and supports the guitar neck while you change the strings or do any kind of work on it. Especially if you have a guitar like a most Gibsons or some Ibanezes and Paul Reed Smith, a lot of acoustic guitars have an angled headstock. It's usually about 15 degrees. You don't want to just lay that down right on a bench because you'll be resting right on that headstock, and that's kind of a risk you don't want to take. I'll just leave it at that. But I picked it up. I finally did. I wanted one really bad and just never thought, $10. I don't know why I hesitated because in the past. Because the thing about this is you may have seen the workbench pads with a support for the neck where it's padded for the body to sit on so that it doesn't get scratched up on your workbench, and then you have the support for the neck, and so you can work on it on your guitar and have that the neck elevated and such, and it's protected. Those are really nice and everything, and I wouldn't mind having one of those if I had a dedicated bench for working on guitars only. But I have one workbench right now, and it's basically a large door that has been converted into a workbench. And I do a lot of things on that bench, from rewiring guitars or working, stringing guitars or working on this or that, or sometimes things just sit on that bench. I don't want to have that, and the padded support would take up more room in storage, whereas this headstand, it folds up and it's about the size of, say, three ink pens all in your hand. So it's not really very big, and it can store away really easily. So what I would do is I have old towels, and I just lay a towel out on my bench for the body to rest on, and leave the bench bare where the tripod would sit, where the headstand would sit. And the headstand has padded feet that resist slipping, as well as a padded area that supports the neck. So it's really cool. I like it a lot, and it's been pretty nice. Just something that I wanted to tell you a little bit about. Also, I went out kind of looking for clear tone treated strings. None of the local places had any. And last week I kind of busted on the I kind of busted on the Elixir strings, because I mean, what I played on, they were from the like 99, 2000, 2001, right around that era, and it just felt like there was too much of a coating on the strings. I just couldn't stand it. It didn't sound right, didn't feel right or anything. But last week I played a guitar that had Elixirs on it, and I didn't really know they were Elixirs. And they said they had the nano coating on them instead of the old coating, and they don't think they use the other one anymore, and it was not bad. I'm not saying that that's what I would necessarily run out and go with, but it was okay. It wasn't, I mean, there's something about the thought of a coated string. In the process, the guys I've been talking to were talking about different coated strings, and, well, I picked up a couple sets of D'Addario EXP coated strings. I picked up a set for my acoustic, which is coated phosphor bronze, 12 through 53. Warm, bright, and balanced tone is what they're saying. It has a hex core with a wrap wire. The wire is coated. I think that's how it is. 50% thinner coating. Anyway, another thing I've understood is that Clear Tone does a lot of the coating of many other manufacturers' strings. So it could very well be that you're grabbing, you know, that these D'Addarios may be uncoated by Clear Tone, and they're just branded D'Addario. So I don't know for a fact. If you know, chime in on the message board. I mean, yeah, on the comments area in the show notes. I also picked up a pair of 10s to put on my SG. Kind of see how the strings that are on my SG right now are fairly new and bright and beautiful. And so I could change these out and kind of really get a pretty good idea of the tone change and the feel change right off the bat. And I'll report back next time about that after I do this. Also, something we got into a conversation with the guy behind the counter about is that I'd been thinking for a long time that my Les Paul is incredibly easy to play. Now, a long time ago, I was playing nines, 9-gauge strings on my electrics, and that was seemed to be what all the guys were, you know, all the rockers were doing back when I was young and learning. But now I use 10s all the time, and they feel great. And, of course, Gibsons don't fight you as much. I think the scale is just slightly shorter, just enough to make it easier to bend strings on a Gibson as opposed to, say, a Fender or other longer scale guitars. But my Les Paul just plays like butter. And it's gotten to the point where sometimes it feels like those 10s are almost between 9s and 10s. Well, I want to try something a little different. I have this theory that even if I put 11s on that thing, it's going to sound and feel just normal. Just because the way the thing is set up, it's just great. So, instead of getting another set of 10s of the D'Addario EXP coated nickel-plated steel electric guitar strings, I picked up a set of 11s, and they will go on my Les Paul next. So this is kind of crazy for me to think about putting 11s on my electric, but I'm going to do it. And I think I'm guessing that my Les Paul won't feel much different, because the thing is an awesome piece of machinery, an awesome instrument. Now then, last week I also talked about the Planet Waves O-Port. I picked up one of those, and I put it in my Taylor. I'm having a really, really hard time figuring out how much of a difference it's making. Is it better with, or is it better without? Is it projecting more, or is it... I mean, because see, I'm just sitting here playing it with the sound projecting out into the room. So what I need to do is set up a nice mic and recording, and do an A-B that way, where I play the mic and get a good signal to the mic, good tone there, and have a nice controlled environment where nothing changes except for swapping out, I mean, the O port. So I'm having, but like I said, I was having a hard time, and my wife didn't really want to say one was better than the other. In some ways, it sounded better without, and some ways it may have sounded better with. I'm not sure. The guys at the guitar store were saying that when they first got them in, they tried them out on several different guitars, and it was funny how it sounded great on one guitar, but it made another guitar sound tinny and thin, and it just didn't work. And I was wondering if it might have been a brand thing, if it was like, say, they were both Epiphone, if it was an Epiphone and a Fender, or a Takumini and a Alvarez, or whatever. They said it was the same brand. It was just two different models with the same brand. So either it's gonna work for your guitar or not. I have not tried it out on my, I haven't tried it out on my classical yet. I want to change strings on my classical first and get them all stretched out and you know, get nice new strings on there, get them broken in so that they stay in tune and everything. And then I want to do an AB there too, and I'll share that information here on the podcast as well. I'd like to let you guys hear that too, so that you can chime in and say, hey, yeah, I liked it without. Unfortunately, I didn't find any Rossard picks, and I'm not sure that the Seymour Duncan Liberator is necessarily for me, so I didn't pick one of those up. I didn't find the option knob, and I kind of want to buy something from somebody local instead of ordering something online. But, I mean, if it comes to that, I will do that, and I would probably just order like maybe three of those option knobs. Those are really cool. I can definitely see a use for them. Now then, and unfortunately, I didn't pick up any garage tone pedals or mod tone pedals or anything like that. The last guitar shop I went to, they have a MXR analog delay that's been talking to me for a while, and I'm having a hard time not picking one of those up. But something else I want to tell you about that's really, really cool is that I played a Nash Guitars T63, which is basically a Telecaster, a regular Telecaster, but it's more of a 60s Telecaster with a rosewood neck. It's your standard setup with the fat single coil that's in the bridge of your normal Telecaster or Nocaster or Esquire, and then your normal smaller pickup in the neck position. It had a Bigsby tremolo on it. It was painted all gold and everything. But the thing is, what Nash does to them, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes here for you to their website so you can browse through it. He ages their guitars, and it makes them feel like an old friend, you know, like a vintage guitar. It's like the closest thing you can get to a vintage guitar without spending thousands and thousands of dollars. And I'm not saying these are cheap guitars, because, I mean, they're right in the $2,000 range, basically, give or take a couple hundred dollars, depending on what model you go with. This particular guitar was AB'd against an actual 68 Telecaster, and you basically couldn't tell the difference, that one wasn't an original that's been around and played, you know, for 40-some years. And I was very impressed. I mean, it wasn't, this particular guitar wasn't the most appealing looks-wise in the store, but I knew there was something different about it, and I was like, I want to pick it up and play it and check it out. And I really liked it a lot. And even though it didn't have the look of the Telecaster that I'd really want to have, I was considering buying it, and it was fairly reasonably priced for what it was. I mean, basically, it's a boutique guitar. Bill Nash makes these guitars that he chooses good parts and finishes them with a thin layer of nitro. He just uses really good stuff, and he makes the guitar that he would want to have. And I definitely recommend going to their website, and the first thing you're going to see is this, I don't even know what it is, if it's a Jazzmaster or a Mustang. I think it's a Mustang. Anyway, on the front, and I mean, basically, if you weren't looking at the headstock, you wouldn't know it as an Fender. But, you know, you go to his website, he has about Nash guitars, the guitars themselves, tips and downloads, and how to buy, and contact information, and policies. You can't buy the guitars directly from Nash, from Bill Nash Guitars, but you have to buy them through a dealer. I have found some on eBay, and they're priced all about the same. You know, right in that $1,500 to $2,500 range. Like I said, they're not cheap guitars, but they're not like if you're gonna get like a 50s or early 60s Telecaster. I mean, it's quite a bit more than that to get a hold of one of those. Even that 68, I think he was asking something like $3,000 for it. And I mean, that's no chump change. Anyway, if you go to Nash Guitars website, you see a brief paragraph about the story of Nash Guitars, and then you can click another link that gives you a much deeper dive into the information and basically his feedback about people's comments about his guitars, which is really pretty cool, and I really like his take on a lot of things. You know, people would say, I'd rather buy a real Fender than some Partsocaster made by Nash or whatever. I did like one thing he said, that he likes the Japanese reissues a lot better than even some of the custom shop stuff. So that made me feel pretty good that this guy was, you know, really into them, because that's what I have basically. It's a 54 reissue Japanese Strat from the early 90s, and that made me feel pretty good about that guitar. And of course, after reading this site, reading through basically everything, every word on his website, and playing that guitar and feeling how it was aged, I have been slowly aging my that Strat. And it just kind of pushed me over the edge to where I just need to, I've started accelerating that effort on that guitar here recently, much to my wife's chagrin. She doesn't like it. She's like, what are you doing destroying a perfectly good guitar? It's beautiful. I don't know. I can't necessarily explain it to everybody, and not everybody's going to get that. Also, I want to try to refrain from using the term relic, because or relicking, because I think that's a copyrighted term by Fender whenever I'm trying to do this as guitar. I've seen a lot of good relicking jobs, and I've seen a lot of good aging jobs and relicking done by Fender and aging jobs done by other companies. And then I've seen some really, really bad ones. And some of the bad ones have been done by Fender as well as other just local people. So I want to avoid any of those. I don't want to have a bad looking aged guitar. I want it to look right. I want it to look natural, like it really was played a ton, and it's just changed. You know, that the playing has aged it in appropriate areas, and that like fretboard wear looks natural. It doesn't look like you took a Dremel tool to it or something like that. Because that's what a lot of them look like, even from Fender. I think those road-worn guitars, I think that's what that looks like. I'm just offering up my honest opinion there. It doesn't look like somebody really played that and put those finger divots in it in the fretboard. So I've gotten back to working on that guitar. It has a nitro finish because I've been able to get some cracking in it. Or some checkering, not that real tight checkering, because I found out from some of the other things I've done with chipping some of the lacquer away, is that lacquer is fairly thick. It's I'd say about a 32nd of an inch thick, maybe a little bit thicker in areas. I'm not sure, but it's going to take a lot of wet sanding to get that thing down to it a reasonable thickness, close to what they probably were in the 50s and 60s before they started using that thick finish in the 70s, which I don't think this is as thick as probably what they're using in the 70s. They were using in the 70s, but it's still pretty thick. So that may be part of some of the things, some of the reason why the tone might not be quite what I want from that guitar. I want a little more warm and that warmth, and I think that the lacquer is probably making it a little more trebly and less warm. So I have started working on that. Also, something I'm going to use as a gauge for that is the my SG has a big chunk taken out of the bottom of it on the face, and that, I mean, that's a 70s SG, and the lacquer on that is ultra thin, and I was kind of surprised because I knew that Fender had thick finishes in the 70s. I thought that the Gibsons had a really thick finish too in the 70s. I'm not 100% convinced of that now. And I know my 87 Les Paul, it has some buckle rash on the back of it. And that top layer, that clear coat of lacquer, came off fairly easily. So that's a fairly thin finish too. So I think it may be that Gibson always had a nice thin layer of lacquer. So that's cool. It's good to know that. I mean, they ran through some tough times in the 60s and 70s and kind of got back on track in about 87 or so. But anyway, that's what I'm going to use as my gauge, that how thin that lacquer really probably should be. I'm not necessarily chronicling it with photos. I probably should, and probably start showing photos on here, on the posting images of the progress on the show notes for y'all to check out. And so, but anyway, I strongly recommend going to nashguitars.com. That guitar was amazing to play. I did not want to put it down. It felt so good. I really liked playing it a lot. I highly recommend, if you can get a hold of one at your local store or whatever and play one, they are very, very cool. I think it would be really, really cool if I could get Bill Nash on the phone. I mean, on here and interview him. That would be super cool. There are also, you know, if you go to the website, there's a link in the top navigation to the guitars. And you have the T-Series, the S-Series. Well, the T-Series is your Telecaster series, which is has your T-52, which is like your typical 52 Telecaster. The T-57, which is more along the lines of your well, obviously it says 57. It's has a one piece C or boat neck, more like your later 50s Telecasters. The one they show featured there has that light white finish to it. I guess you call it a Mary Kay finish. And then there's the T63, which is a 60s type Telecaster with a rosewood fretboard. And then the TC63, which is basically a 60s Telecaster custom, which is a double bound body and looks really nice, makes me think of Merle Haggard. And then a TC72, which is a tele custom 72 with a nice fat humbucker in the neck position. And then the TK54 is like a 52 tele, but with a humbucking pickup in the neck position. And then there's the T69 TL, which is the thin line. And but the one I played was the T63, the ash or alder body, with a gold. I'm not sure if it's Shoreline Gold or not. It may have been a darker gold than Shoreline Gold. And it had a rosewood fingerboard and a Bigsby, and it was really, really nice. I think they were Jason Lawler pickups were in it, and when I finally plugged it in, because I mean I really like the, you know, I try to get to know what an electric sounds like, just its wood. When you're playing it, I don't want to plug it in right away, because if the wood sounds lousy, it's I'm probably not going to sound too good plugged into an amp. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But then I plugged it into a Hughes and Kettner amp, which is really, really cool, really nice. Played the clean side. It's kind of the best of, it was all, you know, the clean side was a whole lot like a twin reverb clean. And then the dirty side was very Marshall-y, could have been a little more Mesa Boogie-ish in a way too. It was a good way to kind of see how it played in both areas. I mean, it you know, both kinds of amps, somewhat. Now the S guitar is your Stratocaster type guitar, and they have the S57, which is like your 50s Stratocaster with a maple neck, and then they have the S63, which is your 60s with a rosewood neck, and your S67. Is your rosewood neck with a larger headstock, kind of like Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. And then the S68HX, what is the difference? So it has a CBS style headstock, that big fat headstock. It's built as a left-handed guitar with strung and wired setup for a right-handed player. So basically the exact opposite of what you would have if you were what Jimi Hendrix played. Because he played a right-handed guitar strung up, left-handed turned over, and this is just the exact opposite for a right-handed, right-handed player to maybe experience the way Jimi Hendrix was feeling when he was playing the guitar. Those are the S series guitars, and then he has E series guitars, which is the Esquire and E57, E63. The basic difference there. You know, the fundamental difference is the maple fretboard as opposed to the rosewood fretboard. He has an E12 guitar, which is a Telecaster, but it's a 12-string guitar. And he has three of those. And he has some P basses. The P52, which is like the original P bass. P55 is a little later. The P57 is your typical P bass, your precision bass, which you normally would think of. Is your late 50s precision bass, and then the P68 is same P bass with a rosewood fretboard, of course, because they in the 60s they started doing the rosewood fretboards on Fender guitars. Also, if you scroll all the way down on the guitars overview page, you will see that he modifies Les Paul guitars as well, and these are quite a bit more expensive than the others. So basically what he does is he gets like the 1960 or the vintage Les Paul standards, and he basically strips them down, takes everything off of them, takes the whole finish off of them, refinishes them the way he wants them to be, and makes them look like 58s and 59s. Makes them look like Holy Grails. They are really, really cool. It would be very difficult to say that these aren't. And these are really Gibson guitars that he has done this to and he's reselling. They are really awesome. I would love to play one of these. I know it's quite a bit more money. And I'm almost guessing. And I've played a 58 and a 59. I've played a few of those reissues from Gibson's Custom Shop, and they are really super sweet. They're the only Les Pauls that I've played that it felt as good as my Les Paul Custom. I would have a hard time believing after playing that T63, I'd have a hard time not believing that these Les Pauls that he mods don't feel and sound even better than what I have right now. I probably shouldn't play one because then I'll want one really, really bad. And they are not cheap guitars. These are in the $3,000 to $4,000 range. Like if you were buying a brand new Les Paul Custom, which, I mean, you know, street value, of course, not suggested retail price. So that's a basic overview of Bill Nash Guitars website, the information that's there. I suggest going there and checking out the stuff and reading everything in there. And there's a lot of really cool tips on the tips and downloads page. Very, very good information there. Just an introduction, information about intonation, strings he uses, how to tune, nuts and intonation, how sometimes they're cut wrong, and that can affect your tuning, neck adjustment, action, neck shift, sharp fret edges, pots and switches, extras. And he also recommends that you buy the How to Make Your Electric Guitar Play Great book from Stuart McDonald. His link, it takes you to the StuMac.com website where you can buy the book, and it's about 20 bucks. So that is the gist behind that. I would love to play some more Bill Nash guitars. I was very impressed, very, very impressed with that guitar. And I've found some on eBay, and they look really cool too. So anyway, if you have any comments or questions, feel free to post them in the show notes or send me an email. So that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the blog or show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. If you liked what you heard today and you subscribe to iTunes or Zune, please let them know by writing a review. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hutt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.